Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber, your host. On today's show, the exciting topic of spectrum auctions. As the demand for mobile broadband increases exponentially and consumers are watching more and more video and streaming audio on their cell phones, the demand for spectrum increases, and there's a need to repurpose spectrum that was once used for legacy technology for 5G and the new technologies that mobile broadband are going to bring. So joining me to discuss this is Ryan Radia, Associate Director of Technology Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Ryan, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
So Ryan, last month, the incentive auction started. And when I say the incentive auction, I'm talking about TV stations, broadcasters, auctioning off their spectrum to the FCC so that the FCC can then auction it off to mobile carriers. Can you explain a little bit about this, what's going on, why it matters?
Sure. So just brief background, this incentive auction process actually really came about because of a 2012 law. The full title is the Middle Class Job Creation and Tax Relief Act of 2012. There, Congress ordered the FCC to conduct this incentive auction to take some of the spectrum that's currently allocated for over-the-air television broadcasting and move it to a more market-driven allocation where it can be used by, among other entities, wireless carriers, think Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, and the like. So the FCC has spent years planning this auction, and now finally on March 29th, it began.
And when you talk about over the air, what we're talking about is the old school way of accessing television, which is to buy an antenna or your TV already has an antenna, and you get the standard national broadcast stations like NBC, CBS, Fox, and CW. Why don't those stations need their spectrum anymore, and why are they auctioning it off?
So there are actually a lot of stations that broadcast these over-the-air television that you pick up with your antenna that are not affiliated with a major network. Just in DC alone, if you tune in on a TV with an antenna that's aimed properly, you'll get dozens of digital over-the-air channels, and a lot of them are, as I said, not affiliated with a major network. And this is actually the case throughout the country. In nearly any metropolitan area or even smaller towns, there are a lot of stations. And so the spectrum that all of these stations are using, in some cases, could be put to a better use, which if that broadcaster were to stop broadcasting and instead that spectrum were to be used for some other purpose, because, of course, this spectrum is the same sort of spectrum that can be used to deliver video to your mobile device, just to name one example. So in general, it's not that necessarily these local stations affiliated with the big networks are going to stop broadcasting. Of course, many people, the majority of viewers actually are getting this content through their cable or satellite provider.
Right.
But in addition, these broadcasters broadcast over the air. At this point, as far as I know, there are no major network affiliates in any towns that just distribute their content over cable, satellite, or the internet. Rather, they all broadcast their content in a digital format that can be accessed by pretty much any modern television with a basic antenna. But they just don't. A lot of other stations, though, other than the big network affiliated stations, just aren't monetizing their spectrum, or in other words, making enough money from the content they air, either because they don't have enough viewers or enough support, that it might not make economic sense for them to continue broadcasting when there are these companies out there with deep pockets that are willing to essentially pay them to relinquish their spectrum and then use that spectrum for some other purpose.
And when you say stop broadcasting, what you're talking about is specifically not broadcasting the signal through the airwaves or the public airwaves to be accessed with an antenna, but some of those stations will still continue to broadcast through the set-top box or through, because as you say, most Americans now are getting their TV content through a cable box or an app. They're not, while it's always an option to use an antenna and get TV for free, basically, most people aren't doing it that way. So is that one of the reasons why they don't need the spectrum anymore? And is it important to point out that some of these stations will still be available, but through the cable box, not through the airwaves?
That is an important point. You know, a long time ago, before cable started to take off in the 1960s and the 1970s, broadcast really was the main way that people received their television. Everyone had an antenna. Of course, the number of people who still have these antennas has dwindled. Estimates are usually in the 10% range of the population, maybe higher if you look at people who have a second or a third or a fourth TV that isn't hooked up to their cable box. But it's absolutely true that just because a broadcast station participates in this auction and ends up going off the air, that it doesn't necessarily mean that it won't continue to produce television content or distribute video in other ways. Of course, some stations may stop operating entirely. That's up to them. But for stations that do go off the air but continue to distribute content, in addition to getting a nice chunk of change from the auction, they'll actually save money in the long run from a perspective of not having to spend the money to broadcast, which is a costly endeavor, especially in an age when distributing over the internet or through a cable or satellite provider really is not costly at all. In some cases, it involves receiving compensation from the cable or satellite provider.
So this really sounds like a win-win in many ways, and it's not a terribly partisan issue in the traditional sense. It's not like the Republicans and Democrats on the FCC are at each other's throats over this issue, as they have been with so many others. But there are some concerns. So in theory, it's a great win-win, right? Mobile carriers, they need more spectrum because the government's been dragging its feet on relinquishing its own spectrum. So a source for getting new spectrum to alleviate the spectrum crunch we often talk about, where there's just so many people streaming video, straining the wireless networks. This will allow them to get that spectrum. And then, as you say, there's a lot of broadcast stations out there that are spending a huge sum of money to broadcast over the air. They're not making that money. Maybe they want to take a payout and leave. Maybe they want to sell the spectrum and continue to broadcast over the top through the online, whatever. But there are some concerns here. And there's the issue of repacking. And that term is often thrown around in this debate. But it's important to point out what that actually means. So can you explain what the issue of repacking is and why some of the TV stations, the National Association of Broadcasters, some members of Congress like Frank Pallone are so worried about this?
So repacking is something that has to happen for this auction to work. It is a byproduct of the reality that what the FCC really needs to do and what the market needs is a continuous block of spectrum in across geographic areas that allows the companies that buy licenses to this spectrum to actually build out equipment and ensure devices can support using the wireless technology that's used to distribute data, for instance, over this spectrum. So in all of our phones that have LTE, they have a baseband chip that's capable of supporting a various chunks of spectrum. It's not feasible to have every city across America have a wireless carrier that operates on a different specific piece of spectrum. That's at this point, that's probably not something that makes economic sense. So what the FCC is trying to do is ensure that the bands are big enough to be viable, to be used for wireless telecommunications, and that they are similar enough across economic areas that they are valuable to the wireless carriers that are bidding, because little chunks of spectrum here and there are a lot less valuable, not just overall, but per megahertz pop, that is per 1 megahertz of spectrum for one per person, compared to these larger blocks. So the repacking means that broadcast stations will have to change the channel on which they broadcast. And in some, the ones that stay on the air, that is. In some cases, that might just mean changing the channel within what's called the UHF, the ultra high frequency band. Now, that's probably what's going to happen in part for some stations that do not participate in the auction, stations that don't even apply to potentially be the recipient of funds to relinquish their spectrum. And that's not where the real costs come in. Where the real costs come in is where a station that participates but does not ultimately receive a matching bid that allows the spectrum to be cleared will have to move to the lower band, the VHF, very high frequency band, and that's the lower channel numbers under 14. In that case, the costs to those broadcasters will not be insignificant. It involves a whole host of technical and engineering obstacles, things like going up on a tower and changing equipment and so forth. So for a potentially large number of broadcasters across the country who participate but don't end up relinquishing their spectrum, the total of the cost they incur is going to be in the billions of dollars.
So when you say participate but not relinquish spectrum, I guess what you're imagining is that some stations will show up at the auction and they just won't get an offer that they like, or they decide that the bid is not high enough. But because others are participating in the auction and others are relinquishing spectrum, that no matter what happens, whether you voluntarily or participate or not, you are going to be affected by the outcome.
Right. So potentially a huge number of broadcasters could be affected by this. Now, with the actual law that I mentioned earlier, that law that Congress passed in 2012 says is that when a station does not participate, it cannot be involuntarily forced to change the band that it's on, but it could be forced to change the channel within the band. That is to go from maybe 49 to 46.
And that's not as big a deal as going from above channel 14 to below channel 14.
Exactly.
That's the thing that's costly.
That's the thing that involves the biggest cost. That's for the broadcasters you mentioned, the ones that are willing, that do show up, that indicate that they are willing to relinquish the spectrum for a particular price, but there is no matching bid that's sufficient. So that's where the costs come in, and the controversy there is whether there's enough money available.
So the FCC has decided that $1.5 billion is sufficient to help the channels repackage and relocate. And some Congressman Frank Pallone, who I mentioned earlier, the National Association of Broadcasters, many of the individual stations themselves, they're concerned that that money is not enough, whereas FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler says it's plenty. So they can't both be right. So what's going on here?
So when Congress passed the Spectrum Act in 2012, that's the provisions of the payroll tax extension bill, it insisted that particular funds be used in particular ways. So as you said, it set aside a $1.5 billion chunk that would be used to compensate broadcasters for the cost they incur in migrating, in addition to setting aside funds for various other things like public safety. Now, the FCC is in charge of actually doling out those funds, but the concern has been raised by some broadcasters recently and echoed by individuals like Frank Pallone, Representative Frank Pallone of the House Energy and Commerce Committee in Congress, that the amount of funds that Congress initially set aside in 2012 will not be enough. So whether those who say that it's not enough are correct, or Chairman Wheeler is correct, I'm not sure. I certainly think that there have been some good points raised by the owners of the stations that could be adversely affected, given the 39-month timetable, that there might not be enough funds available. And sort of this is magnified by the fact that there could be greater participation than what was originally envisioned. The amount of money raised by this auction could be as much as $80 billion, which is well beyond what the Congressional Budget Office estimated in its projections surrounding the 2012 bill. So if there ends up being more participation, for instance, than is required, or if the costs of moving simply turn out to be a bit higher than Congress initially thought in 2012, the pot of money that is allocated may not be enough. And to the extent that this is true, it certainly seems reasonable, given the amount of money that's being generated from this auction, along with the importance of moving the spectrum along to other users as quickly as possible, to set aside some more funds. Of course, anytime Congress is appropriating money, it becomes controversial, especially because the original purpose of this was to reduce the deficit. However, if this ends up raising more money than was projected, that would provide one easy way for Congress to authorize more funds to be spent to compensate broadcasters for their costs.
So the basic issue here is that broadcasters, or Congress intended for broadcasters to be fairly compensated for their spectrum. And whether that takes the form of Frank Pallone's Viewer Protection Act, which would increase the $1.5 billion pot, or that happens at the FCC, whatever it is, it seems that Congress intended that they be fairly compensated, however that happens. And I guess you could imagine some scenarios where, one, you just increase the pot of money. There could be another scenario where Congress says, if necessary, you increase the pot of money. But again, if we're talking about potentially $80 billion in receipts, increasing from 1.5 billion to 1.75 or 2 billion seems like chump change to get this done in the right way. And it, we can all agree, both sides of the auction, the FCC, that we need this spectrum to go to mobile broadband because of 5G in the future, et cetera. Now, there's the one issue of the compensation. There's the other issue of the timetable, and the two are related. So the two big concerns, again, yeah, the compensation, the timetable, you mentioned 39 months. What is the FCC asking the broadcasters to do in 39 months? And why are some, like Frank Pallone, saying that that's an arbitrary timeline and it's not enough?
Well, that's the timeline that the FCC has announced for broadcasters to that end up having to either relinquish their spectrum or repack their spectrum and change their channel or even their band to make that process happen. And of course, this involves not just the things I mentioned earlier, tower equipment changes and the like, but also informing viewers who still watch over the air that the channel number is going to change. Of course, modern TVs can usually scan all available channels. So this isn't a hugely cumbersome process for someone who has a bit of technical know-how, but a lot of people who are watching over your television don't have much technical know-how. So the faster this process happens, the more costly it's going to be for broadcasters who end up having to be repacked. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing in the sense that the faster this happens, the faster wireless carriers and other entities that end up winning the spectrum can start actually deploying useful services on this spectrum that we all hope and expect will be more valuable to consumers than the broadcast signal that's currently being distributed. So there's a virtue to moving this along quickly. There are also greater costs. And it certainly makes sense that if the time frame is going to be accelerated, if this is feasible at all, which is certainly disputed, but if this is a feasible timetable, but it involves higher costs to the broadcasters, because the goal of Congress, as you said, was to make broadcasters whole for their costs of migrating, essentially not to make any of them worse off, to make them either equal to where they started out, or in some cases, if they end up with a winning bid, better off, that Congress ought to look at appropriating right. funds as appropriate to address these costs.
Right. And one of the criticisms of the 39-month timetable is that it's a national one-size-fits-all timetable, when you can imagine that for some broadcasters, they can get it done in less than 39 months. But for others, it might take longer. And the FCC's own estimates said that the move could take 41 months or more. So that's 2 months longer than their own timeline. And there are potential delays. And I guess it makes sense that for some broadcasters in some areas, taking into account like population density or the availability of the necessary engineers to get this done, or coordinating with the mobile carriers, there's all sorts of variables at play that kind of makes you scratch your head and say, the United States is a big country with a lot of varying geography. How can we have the same exact timeline for every single station?
That's certainly true. As you said, stations will vary considerably in how much time they need. I suspect what the FCC is thinking about is that on the other hand, those who are wishing to deploy services on the spectrum are not as well positioned to do so, especially those who are buying nationwide or regional licenses. If there's a lot of unpredictability as to when certain regions or metropolitan areas will be usable to deploy services. So I certainly can understand why the FCC is attracted to this, but I also see the argument that this one-size-fits-all approach is not ideal. And just a sort of broader point here, a lot of these complexities that we've talked about, how much money you pay broadcasters for their migration costs, how fast they should migrate, and so forth, these are questions that obviously the FCC is struggling with and that have been controversial. I mean, although the big picture issue of incentive auction has not been controversial among the vast majority of voices, a lot of these specific issues have, in fact, been controversial. Commissioner Pai, for instance, had a stinging dissent last May, I believe, regarding some specifics of the auction, where he raised some very good points. So when it comes to these specifics, the FCC is struggling. And the fact is, this is a very complicated process, which is why a lot of free market thinkers have said that maybe the right way to think about doing this sort of thing in the future is not necessarily to have an agency micromanage a very complex two-sided auction, but maybe instead to just look to the entities that are currently broadcasting that could perhaps have their spectrum be put to a better use to simply receive a more flexible, fully transferable, alienable, or more property-like entitlement to their spectrum, with the idea being that then they can sort out these things with bidders. Instead, right now, we essentially have the FCC acting as the middleman, the broker, and it's just not very good at doing that. One can imagine a lot more innovation in this space, potentially with much better outcomes in another approach. Of course, that doesn't necessarily involve the government being able to reduce its deficit or extend payroll tax holidays, which is why when it comes to Congress, the auction approach seems to be the most popular.
Right. You've brought up a couple of really important points here is that this is a reverse auction. So the broadcasters are selling it first to the FCC, and then the FCC will sell it to the mobile carriers. Begs the question, why can't the broadcasters just sell directly to the mobile carriers? They might get, of course, you bring up the important point that won't pad the treasury with some deficit reduction, which is, arguably a good thing. But then there's the issue of how this spectrum was obtained in the first place. And we had Brent Skorup from Mercatus on the show to talk about the history of spectrum in the United States. And while auctions are the current norm for allocating spectrum, it didn't used to be that way. It used to be a beauty contest where stations would just go before government boards and make their case for why their programming was going to further the public interest. And we're going to have stations about this and educational programming. And it wasn't about, I'm just willing to pay the most, which is what it is now, because that's how you figure out the market price for something. You put it on the market, see what it's worth. It used to just be much more political. And I guess there's a couple points there of maybe the FCC should have a role, because the government initially allocated the spectrum. There are people who argue that why do we care so much about the broadcasters being made whole if they got this spectrum through a beauty contest anyway? So, I mean, do you have any thoughts on kind of those wrinkles in the process?
Absolutely. So first, I echo everything that Brent said about the absurdity of the beauty contest process by which these licenses were initially doled out in the first place. That was a complete mistake when it happened. Ronald Coase, among others, explained why that approach to allocating this valuable resource that is the airwaves is a horrible way to serve the public, welfare, consumers, and such. So the revolution in thinking moving toward a market-based allocation through auctions and property rights has been a massive victory for those of us who care about policies that make us all better off and that advance the market and welfare. As far as the broadcasters go, given the initial allocation, I think there are two important points for why the argument that we just shouldn't care about broadcasters, they got it for free, isn't the right one. And the first is sort of a principled point, which is that although it is true that the spectrum wasn't initially acquired by paying a market price or in some cases any significant price at the time that the FCC initially decided how to allocate it many decades ago, virtually all modern broadcast stations, especially the ones that are most valuable in the larger metropolitan areas, have changed hands many times in where the transfer of a company that has a license to another company, subject of course to FCC approval, has occurred with an exchange of payment from say one large company to a smaller company or through a merger. So these licenses have received implied or in some cases expressed valuations through a series of economic transactions where people really have paid money for this. So to the extent that there was a windfall when the FCC had signed these licenses initially, that windfall has largely long been realized. The stations today that are broadcasting in many cases paid something approximating market price for the spectrum, albeit subject to the encumbrances. So just the idea that they're going to have it taken from them without compensation seems to be quite unfair.
Right.
Even whether some have suggested it's a taking, but even if it's not a taking because it's not a property right, there are still issues of reliance interests and equitable interests that I think can justify being skeptical. And the second reason, briefly, is more pragmatic, which is that broadcasters exist across the country. There's a reason why there's still a lot of support in Congress for broadcasters, and that's because of their sort of ubiquity in congressional districts across the country, especially in more rural-dominated areas, where you still, of course, have two senators. senators per state, even in areas where broadcasters may have more sway than in others. So we want broadcasters to be part of this process. And the goal, of course, is not that they should all go away or that there isn't a huge valuable role for local original video programming, but rather that maybe it's not over the air or maybe it's in a different way. But we want, there's still more spectrum, lower bands that's going to remain allocated for broadcasting after this process. We want right. continued buy-in from the broadcasters. It's going to be hard to get that if they see this process as hurting them. So from that perspective, even if you don't care about them, if you want this to move forward politically, it's a pragmatic call to say, let's address their interests. Because again, whatever the cost there are of compensating broadcasters for moving or sharing the proceeds with them, the benefits for consumer welfare are so much greater. Tom Hazlett, the professor at Clemson University, has done amazing work where he shows that the total welfare loss of misallocated spectrum is somewhere in the ballpark of $1 trillion a year from a present value perspective. Wow. And of course, that's the entire misuse of spectrum, more broad than just one particular band. But still, we're losing a lot because we aren't making this process happen more quickly.
Right.
So we need the broadcasters to be involved.
Yeah, the basic point is that we want spectrum to go to where it's needed most, and broadcasters need to be part of this. And the way to get this process to go the best is we want more spectrum allocated for mobile broadband. And to the concerns of broadcasters, I mentioned Congressman Frank Pallone introduced the Viewer Protection Act. That, correct me if I'm wrong, would not extend the 39-month deadline, but it would increase the money. And the basic idea is that shorter timeline costs more, longer timeline costs less. So you can tackle that problem either on the timeline side or on the money side. This bill would tackle that on the money side. So, listeners, if you want to get into Wonka Stan, you can check out that bill and decide if that's something you'd be interested in. But this also just raises questions about what's the government's responsibility to alleviate the spectrum crunch. There are federal agencies that have a ton of spectrum. They're sitting on that, and it could be arguably going to better use. And we'll certainly be doing more episodes about that in the future. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Ryan Radia, Associate Director of Technology Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Ryan, thanks so much for joining the show.
It's great to be here, Evan. I appreciate it.
Follow us on Twitter at TechFreedom or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help us and help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.